Welcome to the Huntsville Macintosh Users Group June 2007 formal meeting. Join the meeting in progress.
So much for getting all the business in here.
Yeah.
And apropos of the concept of recording for podcasting, it occurred to me, even though I have this little attachment from my iPod that we've been using so far to record, this is far from an ideal solution. I think what we ought to do is get a USB microphone that we can plug into any available laptop to do the recording. That way we're not bound to me being here with my iPod. And we still can get those recordings up on the internet. Now, that is sort of a little extra point there along the lines of webmaster report, something I neglected to say. It turns out since we put these podcasts up, they've been very popular. They contribute quite a bit now to our website traffic in terms of bytes. Not a large number of downloads, but nonetheless, they make up quite a bit of the load on server. So I think it might be a good idea to upgrade our ability to make podcasts.
Any discussion on this?
Yeah.
Does it take anything special on a computer to do that?
No.
How about storage space?
Maybe 100 meg.
It's relatively small. It's not that big, but it's the sound of a video file.
Yeah.
What kind of an hour recording or 2 hour recording shouldn't take no more than about 400 meg?
Yeah.
What kind of money are you talking about?
$100 max. I haven't priced.
I think there was one I looked at that was about $150.
That's sort of the range I was thinking at.
Yeah, it's probably one of the nicer ones. It's got the reverb type activity for surround sound.
And it'll pick up a lot of the room and a lot of the questions throughout the room.
Sometimes with this microphone that we're using currently, it's really hard to pick up people in the back of the room.
Is it the microphone such that you can place it remotely, or does it pick up better? Like, if you put it back here, or
it's not wireless. It is cable, so you're limited to the length of the USB cable.
Get a USB extension cable.
You're limited to 10 feet on the USB.
It's more. I found
25
feet.
Yeah. Really? You've had problems with anything more than?
I've got 25-foot cables at the office. They work fine.
Well, it's something we could experiment with.
Yeah. Because the microphone anyway is a 1.1 device. It's not a 2.0 device.
Let me suggest, before we get wrapped up into a motion or something like that, is the executive committee go out and do some pricing and come back with a recommendation.
Okay.
We certainly got the money to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Very cool. Any other comments on this? Table it for now until the executive committee gets back. All right. Any other new business? Okay. Well, let's move to, flashes. Anyone have any flashes for the moment? There we go. I was going to say it's a slow news day.
I've been trying to get on to .NET, and I had a drop down that says, sorry, you're not opening the page. It said, lost a network connection. And it said, let it happen, go. So I did, because I haven't heard anything. Nothing's happened. This has been going on for a week or so. So then I thought, well, maybe it's just .NET. So then I tried getting on some other site. And it said, Then it said, the digital signature for this package is incorrect. The packet, I'll take it back. Well, it just said, Safari cannot connect to the server on that one. But Firefox looks fine.
Proxy server? It's the only thing I can
Am
think of.
Am I the
only
one who can't get on the Safari?
I just did.
Okay.
Let's see here if I can pull it up.
Okay.
Preferences.
Have you ever had a problem with secure sites?
No, just .NET. I try to log in and I get the drop down.
Isn't that secure when you log in?
What?
.NET. I think it is.
It is secure. What other sites are you visiting that you can't connect to?
Oh, not that.
So you can't even go to Google with...
I haven't tried Google, but I couldn't get on... I tried just for random. It's easy. I typed in the bank.
Okay, that could be a secure
that's
site.
Secure.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try something else.
Yeah. I've noticed one thing, too. If your time of day on your computer is not set to the current time of day that it is, to maybe like an older time, then you will get security SSL certificate problems. So that's one thing I noticed real quick. I had a friend of mine call me and said, hey, I did that. I kept sitting there going through the security certificates, and they were all saying they were okay, but you go and all of a sudden I just noticed and looked at the time is set back 2 years. And I'm like, man, I clicked that, and then everything started working.
Okay, I'll try that too. Okay, but Firefox works, so that's it.
Very cool.
I'm getting an error message that I'm using the mail program that comes with the Mac, and I'm not able to send it.
What's your error message? Do you know?
I'm sorry?
Do you know what the error message is?
cannot use stmp.pyware.me.
Interesting.
You know
where
you go in there and
you set. Yeah. And it just all of a sudden started happening?
No. Okay. I haven't been able to send you mail since I've had it.
Okay.
It's probably an error account set. No.
Yeah. Go back to
you know,
your mail.
Go back in there to set your, around, where is your mail coming from and so forth. On that particular window, and I've got another where it says STMP server, and I put STMP.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, right now. Okay, I'll go in there too. Put in there STMP.pyware.me.
That should work.
Have you called Highways Help Desk?
Yeah. Yes.
And what have they told you?
They said, what did it say? They sent me an email and it said mail.highway.net.
Try changing it to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's mail.highway.net.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But put it where it has outgoing mail as opposed to
some of them are different ingoing and outgoing, some are identical.
See, that was what I was thinking, that the incoming was the mail highway.net, and I thought the outgoing was this kind of TV.
My outgoing is, my incoming is mail.highway.net, the outgoing is mail.bellsouth.net, because I'm using Bell South as the server. So they are sometimes
different.
Yes, sir. Well, we're talking mail, and this, I think, well, we bought it about a year ago, and I thought I understood the answer. I didn't. When I'm in open Wi-Fi zone, hotel, or even at cafes that are totally set up for truly open email on it, and I use Apple Mail as my main application for mail, and I've got a .NET account. Sometimes, I can use the, most of the time I can use the Apple Mail to my .NET to send and receive, no matter where I'm at, no problem. Other times, I have to log on to web-based mail. Is there something I can do to, because it's a pain in the neck, and you're having to log back on web, the .NET webmail to reply when you're very used to Apple Mail. I get all my incoming mail on my Allergy accounts and my Mac account, open Wi-Fi zone. No problem. It's when I do a reply is where it seems to be constrained based on how they set their server up, and most of the time you can't really talk to anybody and see if they've you know, if it's an open system and there's no intent for the constrain you, why can't then Apple Mail do a normal reply and send the mail on?
So you can send a regular message. If you just want to just start an email, you can send it, but you can't send a reply?
No. I can read all my download all my mail from all my accounts. I've got 5 accounts.
Yeah.
And no problem under any open zone. Mm-hmm. Never had a problem. It's when I go to reply
just
with the Mac Mac mail, it will some zone will keep you from doing that. So then I have to sign on to the web-based .Mac mail, and I can do everything then. Why are you? Is there something in the mail setting that, depending on the zone you're in, are restricting you from doing a, to send in a mail?
I know certain ISPs block access from other systems that aren't their own without proper authentication. So let's say I could be on a system that Comcast does not trust mail from. Let's say, like the Starbucks hotspot, let's say they don't trust them. They could block that access to their outgoing mail server. I know that's happened to me a couple of times, but not without Mac.
Well, doesn't it internally somehow take your, when you use .Mac, take and convert the program like your, it's transparent to the user, it could be that you're actually going through the web-based system to send that mail. Well, a lot of times, my Apple Mail will come back and say, can I send, do you want to use the .Mac and even that's blocked.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Marius, do you have a... Oh.
I've been trying to think this one through. Typically, as David said earlier, ISPs tend to block outgoing email for anybody but their mail server. Some will have some instructions online of how to set things up that you can send me out using the second ISP. But that's about all that comes to my mind. I know my dad had to do that with SPC Global out in California, so he could send things out through the university mail server. And that was kind of a pain to get that set up, but they have instructions on how to do it.
Yeah.
But that's part one. Part two, as David also mentioned, if you're sending mail out from a computer that is not on the ISP's network, then at the other end, you have to set things up to use secure connection because they don't know where you're coming from, so you might be a spam bot. So they want to prevent that.
Yeah.
I'm having a running fight with Charter, and I live over in Decatur. But my wife, who happens to use a PC, can get onto the net, but she cannot dump her mail. And folks at Charter have about 20 fantasy explanations for that.
So they're creative, aren't they?
They are creative about why they can't. But the bottom line is that just being able to get on the net does not necessarily mean that you can use the email. And the funny thing is, I can use the email over essentially the same connection that she's using, but finally I got an answer that I just immediately went to their boss about and said, your technician gave me this answer, and that was that, oh, they couldn't work with Outlook Express Mail in Microsoft. And I said, he couldn't tell me what mail system it could be used in. But like I say, I've been having a running fight with Charter. They're dropping out on me frequently. And that's the only thing I can think of.
I've never had, I've probably been to 200 plus, but I've never had trouble ingesting mail from all five mail. Never. Never had one when you're an open cell.
It's just
a matter of sense.
Have you tried turning authentication? Is that, well, I think you actually have to have that for .NET. I might have lost on this one. It's different. Verify your settings. That's the only thing I can recommend. Look at, if you log into .NET, there's a bunch of tutorials there of how to set up the mail app. And just make sure that you've got it one for one. Otherwise, .NET is probably blocking that particular hotspot or that particular access.
Or the Apple application program. The Apple mail program. Got some setting that's not letting it go out
through .NET. Or that, yeah. Check your settings. If everything corresponds with what's on the website, then .NET, Apple, is blocking that access from that particular provider, that hotspot. So, that's the only answer I've got. So, any other flashes? Sure.
Question about the 10.3, that the bookmark bar was supposed to pass or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think we want to put a website up there that we use temporarily, say, for a week or a month or something like that, and get access to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, when I drag it out, I'll not have it up there anymore. It just disappears when I drag it out. So, a way that you can do that, if you don't lose it, you can put it in a...
Yeah.
Someplace
without
losing the...
You can set a folder up.
Yeah.
So... That icon that Dave was clicking on, up there left, goes into the bookmarks.
Okay.
And then you can create a folder and drag it into the bookmarks menu and any number of things, whatever you want to do with it. Okay.
So, I just click that icon, come down here and save... Hey, my cat's on. It's on. So I created a folder called Save Bookmarks. And move Geek to Live down there.
Okay.
All right. And then you want access to it again. All you have to do is just click that. And double click. Pull it right up. All right. Any other flashes?
I've been trying to go two security updates.
Okay.
And I keep getting another route bounce, and none of the checked updates can be installed. The digital signature for this package is incorrect. The package may have been tampered with or corrupted since being signed by Apple.
Have you tried rerunning the software update?
Say again?
Have you tried rerunning software update?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's happened to me several times.
Okay. Simplest thing to do is go to Apple's website, www.apple.com, click on support, click on downloads, and manually download those packages.
Hmm.
That's a separate process. Just double click on that .png file. And follow the instructions and install it even without using the software update. It'll tell you what you need to install and find the appropriate package on Apple's website, as Dave was ably showing right now.
Go to Mac support
is apple.com support downloads, as you can see up on the title bar. And that has the list of all the reasons Apple supply it. Updates. Again, there you have to be a little careful because it will give you the updates, all the updates, even the ones that don't apply to your computer. So you have to make sure you pick things up according to your operating system, like 10.3 or 10.4, or your car PC or Intel if it's 10.4. If it's client or server. So you have to be a little careful that you don't download the wrong one. Okay. Oh, no prevention from installing it, just waste your time downloading.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Bob?
So Larry Stram came in. I wonder if he had any great word for it.
I got a lot of great word, but it's... I mean, it came out with the Magic Pro this week. 15 inches are based off the LCD based as a LED backlit rather than the older fluorescent Apple doing it. When you go green, faster processors, I think the high end 15 now comes standard with the 160. You get the 17 with a higher res screen with a 250 hard drive. That's about it.
Nice. Any other nice news? Any other nice news? How's the building coming along?
Building's coming along. The concept will be done by the end of the month.
Nice.
Fixtures won't be done until the middle of July. We'll probably hopefully move in, start moving in the first week of July or the second week. We're going to have a grand opening planned for August 18th, I believe.
Nice.
It will also be our 20th anniversary.
Very cool. Well, all right. Any other?
My wife's been having problems with her AOL on her iPhone. It's working fine, and all of a sudden, it quit unexpectedly. And did it time and again, and so I uninstalled it and reinstalled, downloaded the new one and installed it. Did the same thing. AOL doesn't know what it is, Apple doesn't know what it is, so I sent a report in. But I don't know whether anybody else has had that problem or not.
I'm having problems with all kinds of things going down. And regularly, the Mac OS X shuts itself down. I get this message in five languages that I need to restart my computer. It's been in the Larry's twice and was working fine from Tuesday till yesterday, and now the stuff is started.
Mm.
And I need help. My email addresses are corrupted, it says, and I can't get to them at all. Does anybody know how to fix that?
Addresses are corrupted.
Well, the address book is corrupted. And
that's...
And what Ted said, you're saying is AOL. One day I couldn't open any Windows, words. And another day I couldn't open iPhoto. And one thing strengthens it. I think it's a gremlin or a bug, but Adam says no. But he can't solve it either. So I mean, you're having any problems. Yeah, it does sound like a bug.
It's not the hard drive or anything like that.
Larry?
she brings it in, and Adam says she can't replicate the problem, but I'm kind of wondering if it's something that's put to your computer, like a printer or a scanner.
I just bought a new printer yesterday.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it was asking before that.
So it's not there.
Yeah.
You can't replicate it because different things happen every day.
And if you disconnect all your peripherals, does it still happen?
Well, I have disconnected all my peripherals.
You can do a process of elimination. You disconnect your printers and all the other junk on there and try and operate it. If it operates fine for a while, then connect one of them back up, operate it, see what happens, and then you kind of work through that. And it may be that it may not be just one peripheral, but it could be two counteracting. But you might have to get to the place in the extreme where you have to have two of them connected to see what the complications are. But that's not a simple solution, but it's an inexpensive solution.
Let me ask you this. Do you have a USB hub?
Yeah.
What kind of, what maker is it? Do you remember?
I got it somewhere.
Is it the 2.07 one? It's got two little things.
Five here in the back and two in the front.
Okay. Let you know, I had the exact same thing happen to my boss's computer. His would just erratically just sit there, and then all of a sudden it would just go bonkers. And what happens is, and it only happens after he's done a print to the print. And then after a while, then it will time out. We noticed that that Belkin, and it has something to do with that Belkin, we actually went and bought it was a different brand. I can't remember what it was. We bought a different one, and he hadn't got that problem.
Some USB printers instructions will tell you not to tell you to connect it
directly to the hub.
But they'll work through the hub
until
these problems are off.
Yeah, and it's something that we're thinking that Belkin tends to go to sleep. And we're thinking that because we actually put a peripheral monitor up to watch when things get added to the machine and taken away. We notice that after a while, things will just start popping up, and it's just like it went away. And then it would come back and say it remounted itself. And it would actually monitor that it was coming on and offline.
I think the only things I have plugged in there are things like camera and iPod, things that you just plug in occasionally.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we noticed that it was only with the printer after that. We noticed that if he printed the printer or did something, then after that he would get the Japanese scream of death after a while.
The multilingual scream of death.
Because it really doesn't tell you much.
So nobody knows what's wrong. We have to go up to the dressing
room. When you get that screen up, that means your kernel has hung, so it's a real crash.
Yeah.
It's a real crash.
It's a card crash.
Yes. So how do you fix the address book? Well, you have it backed up?
On another computer, but my backup is corrupted too on that computer.
Oh.
There's a new term you're going to learn. It's called start over.
I may be able to look at your... one thing about it, the address book is actually written in XML. That's how it stores today. And I could probably go through that XML manually, maybe recover something. If it's readable, it's detected. So I should go to that for you if I can get that file from you.
Let me finish my last one. Well, for a lot in there that I didn't intend, but along with this AOL thing, I pulled out her filing cabinet folder. Is that where the addresses are stored? I thought it was.
The addresses are actually stored, the address book is stored in the user library directory. Under either application support or in the actual application, which is address book.
No, not with AOL.
You're
talking about AOL?
AOL
actually.
AOL probably stored on their server.
Yeah.
But what did you just say? AOL?
It's under your user library directory under either application support or under Apple, or could be. I don't have my Mac turned on, so I can't tell you exactly what
it is. Can you follow that on the constraint?
I don't have AOL.
You got the address book.
You got the address book.
I've got the address book.
Stay with us, please.
Well, it's two different systems.
No, we need to answer Tim.
Okay.
Yeah,
but,
I'm still haven't gotten through completely the situation.
Okay.
Once she gets her addresses now, she goes into address book.
Right.
And her addresses are there. Her AOL addresses are there.
Oh, then that's good. I thought it was her address book. It was not.
No, it's my address book. They're two different problems.
Yeah. Her AOL. When I uninstalled AOL, I pulled out the filing cabinet folder, which I thought is where addresses were stored, so that I wouldn't delete those. But I don't know how to get them back in. But they do show up in the address book.
Now, this address book.
this address book, right?
Or AOL address book.
No, this address book.
Okay. So AOL's email address is shown.
Did you lose anything?
Again?
Did you lose anything?
So this is his wife. I'm there for him. Oh. They're two different problems.
Yeah.
They're related, but
So did you lose it? Did you lose anything?
I don't think so. There's 303 addresses in there, and that's probably what she had in AOL.
But if it's exactly the same, then I wouldn't worry much about it. Because right there, if you use the address book that's built in the computer, every application that's on the Mac that uses an address book will use that book.
All right, now, when she uses that address book, but then tries to send a message from there, she'd go to type and get a one word, and then it will stop typing.
That means it could not find any match in that address book.
Well, I'll pull up the address, and the address will be in the to line, but then when you go down to type the message, it types one word, and then it stops.
So, let's say you click here.
You're going to send a message to that person. Well, that will need you. Yeah, send an email.
Right.
Except it's going to pull up Apple.
Right, now.
Yes. Because it works with all the Apple applications. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right there. The two, the address will come up to the two. I put a subject in it. I haven't tried to copy and blind copy, but that goes in there. Then it starts typing the message. And when you type the first word, hit the space. I don't know what it has to do with space, but when you hit the first word, hit a space, and then go to type the second word, nothing happens. It just stops.
Can you move your mouse still? Can the mouse move? You know?
Yeah.
Can you close the document? I mean, can you close the email?
Can you actually just close it and it'll say cancel the email?
Yeah, when you close it, it says, do you want to save it? Or?
Well, the only thing I can think of that's probably happening is that the auto spell may be
This is mail.
AOL.
Because that's the only thing at that point when you're in the subject or when you're in the body message line, that's the only thing that's actually checking.
Let me suggest something that may be most obvious, but I'm not sure if you've done. Have you run repair system permissions?
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's a file that you can't open, and it causes hangs like that.
I don't know whether, let me say, yeah, we've done it fairly.
Yeah, I don't care actually when I'm running into a problem and it doesn't work.
Okay. Just stabbing, because often that sort of thing.
I've been stabbing for 2 weeks.
You've got it all perforated by now, don't you?
Yeah, I'll say. I don't think anybody would recognize your computer.
This is on a desktop unit?
Yes, iPhone.
Oh, it's on an iPhone?
Why don't you bring it?
Can you bring that in?
Or
can I get to it? You got it? I was just like, fucking.
No, I didn't get it. I'll bring it next time if I still have a problem.
Yeah.
And you've done all the software updates and AOL is all up to date.
So AOL, I still haven't been able to install. Well, I go partway through the installation, and then it says, quit.
That sounds to me like you have a partial installation over a full installation.
Yeah.
That's usually not good.
Have you?
I can fix that problem. I mean, if it's ever happened that during an installation you had one, and you never had that problem, but I would have to manually go in and edit some files, but I can fix that problem where it would actually take a full installation.
You got to be at our next meeting.
I'll be there.
Just before you bring it in, have you tried re-downloading the AOL install?
Yeah.
From their website, not using. Okay. And it still does that. Okay. Just making sure.
It took me a while to figure out his problem with his disk. Did you ever have that situated to calling Adobe back?
I've been so busy at work, I still don't have my new DVD.
So in other words, I've got my copy installed a long time before you did, and you bought it?
Yeah.
It's before I did? It's
I nice,
by the way.
I have everything on here with
Photoshop. He's got literally got a copy with the file on the
I saw it. I was here with you guys. I mean, you did the smoothing and figured the file.
Because I said, I had to go through the like manually. Like, yeah.
Cool. Any other questions?
I can make a printed copy of the AOL address book.
Do you have AOL?
I have AOL. I don't know whether you can print it or not. I know that AOL does funny stuff. I can try it again.
Can you export it? You can export it, but you can print it.
Yeah.
I remember AOL when it was cute.
Welcome.
I trusted him since.
Yeah.
If you can export it, if you go to click on the address book, go to File, if there's an export that you can open up in like Excel or Word.
I don't see any export.
No export.
It's in your own address book.
Mm.
If you can export it, that's yeah.
Do y'all have any experience with printing the...
I think that question came up about 3 years ago.
Yeah, AOL does funny stuff.
Yeah.
Have their own internal form.
I think really
your
internal.
What's this other address book you're talking about?
Well, this is the Apple Mail. It's this one.
Yeah.
You're using Apple Mail, and that's the address book that they have. That's in a standard form that you can import and export.
Yeah, but when you print that, it takes about 70 pages because it does.
Is this Apple Mail a free service or do you pay
for it? It's built into the operating system.
You still have to have
You have to have an ISP.
An ISP.
Yeah. Well, to use. The
mail.
The address book, you don't have to. But, yeah. For the Apple Mail, you can use any ISP. Virtually any ISP, I should say. As long as they support what they call POP3 or IMAP, you can use their service with this mail app. So if you've got Highway, Comcast, Knowledge, Charter, those kind of people, you can use this mail application.
I've always had either CompuServe or AOL. I haven't tried any other ISP. Well, I'll take that back. I signed up with Bell South and I automatically get some other
Unfortunately, apparently, there isn't a way to print that out.
I didn't.
Yeah.
This was a question asked of me by a couple we know that had a Macintosh. And
goodbye.
They did a lot of traveling. And that's coming in loud. they did a lot of traveling and they asked me, you know, I'm an HMUG member, I don't know all the answers. How to print out the address book. I fiddled with that thing and I couldn't find any way to do it. And I may have 3 years ago asked the question. You know. Where are you at now?
I went to Google.
Print information of all contacts.
Yeah.
You can print all AOL address books from either AOL sign-in
That sounds when like a PC.
Online. It says, print all your contacts at AOL, go to the menu bar, Click on the address button. Go to the drop down menu. Click on the address book window. Click print.
And you're going to use an AOL 8 for that.
Yeah. If you're using AOL 7 or lower, simply click the Print All Contacts option to select it. So, apparently, we answered a three-year-old question.
Well, I'm using AOL 5 because that's what they provide for Macintosh. I'm not using PC.
Oh, yeah, I could use another problem.
Pardon?
Yeah, this could be just a generic help.
They do a lot of things for PC that they don't provide capability for Macintosh. Like security.
Is that all?
There's a copy of the address book over to a Mac.
Well, I think that's from PC to Mac. We can click on it, though.
Well, what's your Mac OS?
What are we talking about? OS 10.4.
Well, there is a later AOL, because my AOL version for Mac OS 10 is version 10.
Yeah. I thought version 10 was out.
Yeah. So you could probably update the AOL client and be able to print all contact information.
I'm not going to do anything until I learn how to back up. That's why I'm here today.
All right.
I think we still got past question.
Okay.
Let's get back.
Yeah.
Get back to your problem.
Yeah. I'm on the Mac mail. Whatever that means.
And I feel you were saying, if it's Apple's address book, the one that comes from the operating system, which is after all what mail uses, if that file's corrupted, you should be able to look at the XML and try to extract it.
Well, this has happened since I got it out of the
shop. If it's having a problem with mail, and if you open up address book, it will also have a problem. Open address book.
Yeah.
Oh, well, when I open...
The same file.
It's the same file.
When I open iCal, that's what alerted me to it. When I opened iCal, a message came on that said my addresses were corrupted. My address book is corrupted.
Yeah.
And I went to the address book and I couldn't open it, and I tried to send an email, and where yesterday I could type the name in and it would send it, now I don't type it in. I mean, it lets me type it, but it doesn't.
We're talking about the association when you're trying to send an address from iCal, using iCal.
No, yeah. I'm just saying that iCal is where I got the first message that there was something wrong with the address book.
So you opened up iCal, said, hey, there's a problem. You clicked on address book.
And I couldn't open it.
Tried
to send an email, and I couldn't put an address. Now, I can type an address in, but I can't get it from the address.
Okay. Yeah, we need to...
Sounds like you got a little bit more of a harder problem.
But I can figure it out. I mean, it's got to be on there somewhere. As long as it didn't get deleted.
And
the backup is corrupted too, but I have an iBook, and I have a check that surely it couldn't corrupt from here to here.
Okay. So
I do have my address.
Okay. Do you have a .Mac account?
No.
Okay.
Because I was going to say, that would be your savior right there.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you had synced up your contacts from one to the other, you can download
it. As long as we sync up the corrupted file.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm just looking at my
address book data file, and it is not XML. It is some binary gibberish.
You're looking at the wrong file. The actual data file, I've actually found it. It is in 3.0 standard XML format.
Oh, really? So this must be a leftover from 10.3 then?
Yeah, that's an old one. It's all XML. See, the whole operating system, almost all of it now should have been converted over to XML.
No, no kidding. Where do you remember where that's hit?
Well, y'all figure that out.
If she has a copy of a good address built on another computer,
copy right
just
over.
Copy it over and delete it over.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to do that.
Well,
all right.
Once Billy figures out what the file is, we should be able to tell you.
Backup address book.
Yeah, you can do that.
My backup is corrupted too.
You said you may have a computer that has a good one.
I'm checking right now.
Okay. If it is good, then you take it on a disk. So, what an awesome segue.
There's still other flashes.
Yeah.
About. I've got a large trade-in coming in that I've got some 12-inch iBook G4s, 133 gigahertz, 512 RAM, I think they're 40 gig drive combo, airport card, and Bluetooth, and they'll be going for like $500, but yeah, nobody wants it.
Nice. So, any other flash?
Last minute we talked about iSync, and I was interested in backing up the names and phone numbers in my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So if I lost them, I could dump them back. And when I opened up iSync, the first indication I got that it was going to mix everything in my telephone with my address book.
That's correct.
Completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to do that without obliterating all that stuff?
You tell it not to sync the address book.
Did you tell it what?
Not to sync the address book. You can sync everything else, like calendar and all that, just not address book.
Okay, what I wanted to do was have a backup address book file with my cell phone telephone numbers in.
What kind
Here's
of cell phone
I'm
you got?
Come to address book, back up your address book to a file. And as soon as you do that, then go clean out your address book. Go sync up your phone book off your phone. It will put everything into the address book. Back that up to a file and clean it back out and restore your address book back the way it was.
Okay.
So,
what you do is you come in here to address book and you say backup address book, and I'll just dump that to my desktop. I like the fact that it puts a nice little date on there. And you save it. And so it made a backup of my address book. And dear Lord, help me.
That'll work. Actually, what he's doing, it'll work.
Yes. And you also want to do the groups.
Yeah. Okay. You want to do all your groups.
And then you use that address book for your
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Then you come in and you back that up. And you title it phone.
Yeah.
Then you come back after you delete everything out.
Restore.
Oh, God. A demo went right for a change.
If I was
doing
exactly what you were talking about, I spent the last next 30 minutes deleting names out of my cell phone.
Yeah, you will. You'll spend.
That's what I was all afraid of. That's what I said. I'm not pushing magic, but yeah.
So that's the way you could do it. I think it's Missing Sync. I think has some tools in there to back up specifically, but that's like a $45-$50 purchase.
Yeah.
This is free.
And it's a pretty good package. Yeah. I use Missing Sync.
My address phone works fine in my iBook.
Okay.
When I just tried to send a test email to her, I got a message that says, the sender address, pathhazardhighway.net, was rejected by the server.
It's because you're not on Highway's network.
You're not on Highway's network.
Yeah. If you went home and you did that, you shouldn't get that error.
Right.
Or if you sign on to Highway.
Wow. We've got
well,
backup and then email.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, your address book is fine. All you have to do, and I'll do that again. Back it up, and then when you get to your home, transfer it over to the computer, a thumb drive, CD, network, however you do that. And hit restore. So. Any other flashes? Sir?
I got a quickie. I said using 10.3 because I may have a misunderstanding here. I understand when you go to 10.4, you lose all capability in system 9. Is that correct?
No.
No.
You lose that once you buy an Intel based Mac.
Yes.
Okay, but system 10.4, you, I've got a.
Because I'm classic under 10.4, as long as you have
a dual starter, I'm 10.3, I've got a 240, because it's hard to make your
There, it depends on your hardware. Some of the old mirror machines, like a G5, will never ever boot under 10.3, I mean, under 9 something. You can only run it in classic mode within 10. The last machines that were boot in 9 were dual processor G4s.
The single processor G4 works too. I have one. Dual boot in 9.
Yeah.
Single processor.
That's what I thought.
We have single G4.
Yeah, G4 no problem.
Yeah. 10.4 is no problem.
No, it's not the operating system. It's the hardware.
Okay.
I have one more thing. If you use Epson ink that has a guitar on it, talk to me. I've got a deal for you. I had all new ones in the computer quiz.
All right.
Bob was talking about doing something with his cell phone and syncing it with your computer. Is there some cable that connects them?
It would be Bluetooth, wireless. Bluetooth, wireless. If your computer has got Bluetooth in it, you have this icon right here. And you can turn on Bluetooth on most cell phones these days and wirelessly sync your cell phone with your computer. It's a virtual cable. So.
Okay, I've got a cell phone which I have not cared to enter any phone numbers or names because it's so darn, I'm not a 18-year-old kid that can things, you know, would be with me.
You're a 12-year-old kid.
Not that either. And I often wonder, why can't a person create his address, names, and phone numbers on the computer and transfer it to the cell phone.
Yes. Yep.
You can do that using Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
Would my iMac G5 have Bluetooth on it automatically? Or
the question is, what's your phone has on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, iMac G5 someone came with them.
Do you know what model phone you've got?
It's a Nokia.
You don't have to know.
Yeah, mine's got Bluetooth.
Actually,
it's also got hardwired.
So who's running the meeting? Oh, that's me. See if they can make a USB cable for it.
Yeah. There seem to be some outlets on the bottom here.
Yeah. In the past, they used to make data cables for cell phones, but you had to buy the cable, then buy the software, and it was only PC. And now things, since Bluetooth has come around and USB, it's kind of opened up a little bit more.
Does he have Bluetooth on it? Does he have a data cable connection?
I asked him to go to Singular to find out. Because some phones do, some phones don't, even though it looks like they should.
Some of the providers also disable
Google function for
Verizon.
And they only allow you to use headphones. Yeah. You can sync up with an automobile or computer. Or, yeah. I think Verizon does that.
Yeah. All right. Any other flashes?
One of the things that we're going to start offering is new storage classes. So I've got a training group down here. I was wanting to provide this up to maybe the Mac user group, move their meetings over there, and I'll provide the training room for the time that you got to meet.
Cool.
Sweet. Yeah. The room's going to be about this size, maybe just a little bit smaller.
We're
going to
have sausage biscuits.
No, I'm going to have to provide those.
We'll definitely take you up on that.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Something you might want to bring up the next one.
Now, I remember we were talking at one time that you might not have wallpaper or chairs.
No, we're going to have chairs. The wall will be painted, but they won't have wallpaper.
There.
One time, we weren't sure how much the project was actually going to cost because the cost kept rising. So the training room was going to be the first budget cut, and it wasn't cut. So
nice. That was full training room. So, very cool.
I've got a welcome hub for I think it's 6 USB. Auxiliary ports, and it's powered. That's my thumb drive, and these are the little cheapy ones. I go to plug it in, so there's not enough power on this thing. Plug it into, it's fine. Why is that?
Just because it doesn't have enough juice going to it, doesn't have enough amps being pumped to that little hub to actually power the circuitry in that little thumb drive.
So there's more hogs than most. I mean, I got
Another. Yeah.
He's probably getting his power off. You have a separate power supply for the hub?
Yep.
That's what I just said.
Some of the Belkin hubs have a little switch on them, you barely see, that switches it from self-power to AC power. Mm-hmm. So if it's on self-power, then it's not pulling power off the AC.
Because when I got it, I had the same trouble and sent it back to them. And they sent me a new one, I still had a problem. It must be in my suite.
Yeah. I've had that problem with ones that needed to be powered. Just they weren't providing enough power for some of them. So, but look for that switch.
Okay.
Speaking of Microsoft Office, I read this week that Office 7, no, Word 7, that is a part of Office, is not going to be compatible with all kinds of new things coming out. And your old files are not, you need to check into it if you use Word and you want to run
7.
The answer is, first of all, 7, you mean 2007. That's the Windows version.
Yes.
It has a new file format that you need a plug-in to be able to read and write on the Mac version of Office 2004. Yeah. Now, Office 2008 is due later this year, if you can believe Microsoft. That will be compatible. Okay. But at any time, you have to download this little thing that allows you to input and export. But that's kind of still beta-ish.
I'm only in 2000, so I know we're
not
8 years old.
Yeah, but the other easy solution is if somebody wants to send you a file that is using Office 2007 on the PC, they'll make sure they save it in the format that is more compatible. If it's only a particular Microsoft XML, whatever, what you may call it, Open Office, not so Open Office file format that they're using, that's the problem.
That kind of question has come up just about every time Office has come out, and Microsoft has yet to shoot themselves in the foot on this. So.
Well, they try hard, though.
Oh, yeah. Any other flashes?
David, you're looking for Phil.
Huh?
You can comment on this. It just went off. You may have seen these frames, but you could take your digital card from your camera, put it in the back, and it will show you a slide program of your pictures. I have a daughter-in-law out in Houston who likes to take a lot of pictures, and she mails them in. Of course, her grandmother, or not her grandmother, her mother, Betty's two grandkids live out there. So she takes pictures of all the grandkids. And this particular frame, you can hook up wirelessly or with a cable to your internet. And I haven't been able to get it to talk to the internet wirelessly yet. But she can load her pictures up to a website with this company, with the SIVA. And then we can download it, set it up automatically, download up to 50 pictures. And then it will run a slide program during the day. So you can kind of walk in, you can set this up to to vary the speed of the slide program. So you can sit there and look at it with your eyes. Or you can just look at it as you go by and see new pictures. But if I can ever get this thing talking to the internet, I think my wife would be real happy. So anyway, it's SIVA is the company.
CEIVA.
And they're the only ones that I know of that have a server up there where you can upload pictures.
Do they charge you for the subscription to do that?
They charge you they'll charge us for the subscription, but they don't charge people uploading to it. And you know, if anybody around, we have some friends over in Australia, I suspect they'll be uploading pictures. But there's no charge to those people. And once I get this thing up and running and get registered, then I'll send the email addresses to SIVA, and they will send emails out to whoever I identify, inviting them to join this parade, and then they can upload pictures to it.
Well, all right. I apologize. I got home last night and I started working on my presentation and I fell asleep. Do what?
I said, I hope you don't do that in your sales.
The boom helps me with that. Yeah. So it has. Do what? Yeah. So my presentation isn't as pretty as the others I've given, so I apologize. Has this ever happened to you?
What is it?
No. Very good.
All right.
Again, my comment about lacking light bulbs in the ceiling.
Okay. Well, you did say that last time. I remember.
It's not gotten any better, has it?
No, sir.
So, has this ever happened to anyone?
No.
I can't say the same. not that it's been that bad, but the bottom left corner happened to the motherboard. The motherboard ate itself. And thank goodness the hard drives and everything were okay, but I've had backups, so I was happy. I called the manufacturer, said, your motherboard ate itself. What? It can't do that. Yeah, it does. They replaced it. Happened in the exact same time frame that the first one did, so. Anyway, we're talking about backups today.
Hey, I got a super short story. I started a job. And they had a hard drive that had everything on it. And it was everybody wanted to do this work that I got totally unqualified for and lasted about 5 months. But anyway, I pulled a hard drive out to back it off on something and had it sitting on the top of the frame of the computer. And some guy came in and says, oh, what's your problem? And he just grabbed all the sides were off. He grabbed the CPU by the frame, picks it up, and the hard drive was sitting, I just set it there for a second. Mm-hmm. He just picks it up and just it goes up in the air and down in the ground. And that was all the data
And it really resulted, the reason I lost my job. I couldn't recover from it. Everybody had bits and pieces of it everywhere. It was so disparate, you couldn't really put it back together.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and they tried to back it up. I mean, to recover, you know how they could forget it.
Gotcha.
Right.
Let's see here. I forgot to do some math last night. 4.5 times 6. Okay. Why is it important to back up? It's your data. It's your money or your company's money. And did I say it's your data? It's important to you. If you got it, you created it, you gathered it, you obviously care about it. Yeah. And an example of what happened, my dad's work, they apparently had this really wonderful backup system, and everything would back up to this huge, massive server, and it was backed up to a tape drive, and the tape drives were then sent off to Baltimore, and that way it was off-site and everything. Didn't exactly happen. Excel ate one of his files. It just was totally corrupted. It cost the company about $10,000 just to get that one spreadsheet back, because he spent 3 months on it, and all that time and effort, that was just what he put into making that spreadsheet, and he had to recreate it. So backups are important. What kind of data do you back up? Photos, documents, large projects, programs, serial numbers. That is very important. Raise your hand if you've ever bought a piece of software online. How many of you got emailed that serial number? Or did it display it? All right. How many of you write it down, keep it in a safe place, write it on a CD? Four hands.
If you download it, you have that CD, you write it on, right?
Yeah. But a lot of people don't think, hey, I've got the serial number, it's in my email, I'll back up my email. Well, you need to write it down somewhere else. You need to print out that email, you need to print out that website that shows you that serial number. Because a lot of times if you lose it, you can't go back and re-download it, and you'd have to buy it again. It just depends on how the company works. Some companies are forgiving, and sorry to hear about that. Here's your here's a new serial number, or here's your serial number.
The stamp program, do they? Don't have that serial number. They will not refund misprinted stamps.
Yeah.
Also, just keep in mind too. Remember the date you bought it too. A lot of people, if you buy the software and even though that you lost the serial number on it, if you don't remember the date or the time frame, they won't give it to you. You have to buy it again.
Yeah. So it's important to remember that. And of course, email. You know, if you're corresponding with family or if it's work, it's important. A friend of mine, she almost lost all of her emails that she got from her mother that passed away. And so I spent about 2 days working on her computer, and I recovered every single one of them and made 3 DVDs for her. One to put in a safety deposit box, one for her to keep, and then just a spare to have around. Things that go wrong backing up. Media failure. I've had that time and time again with people reusing tape cartridges over and over and over again. Human error. Someone didn't really push that tape in, or didn't use the right kind of disk to back up on. Software error. You know, if something happens in software, it crashes out or doesn't completely back up everything. Hardware error, network failure, that kind of thing. So you got to check and make sure that you've got these backups done. What can you back up to? USB drives, thumb drives, writable CDs, DVDs, iPod, or the internet. Some of the longest used backups that I've done is on a hard drive. I've got a spare hard drive that I keep in a fireproof safe. When I need to back up, I pull it out of the fireproof safe, I back it up, and I put it and its power cable and a connector cable back into the fireproof safe. Because what's the point of backing up if your house burns down and your hard drive burns with it? So you need some sort of protection for it. Really, CDs, DVDs, I think, what is it, 20 years is how long they're supposed to last? The writable ones?
Which writers are 20. They do make a more expensive one called Archive.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to last 100 years.
Would you have a reader 20 years from now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100 years, Cypress drives are not likely.
I mean, there's always a good reason. I mean, how many people still have VHS tapes? That's still VHS. Yeah. And so you're going to definitely have the ability to read that down the road. iPod, it's, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's an external hard drive. The new ones are USB only. Then the internet, it's not as reliable age-wise and archival-wise, but it's a good, you know, daily, weekly backup for your things like address books, especially if you have multiple computers. It's a great way. You don't have to worry about, you know, boxing up your hard drive or making sure your backups are in something safe.
What's the cheapest CDs? They last about 5 years.
Gosh.
It depends on brand, I'm sure.
Average is about 10 to 20.
Yeah.
10 to 20?
Yeah. I've cut.
That's the average.
See,
as long as you don't scratch them.
There was some brand that's a step above that, like double that. It's not that much more better.
They're only making two different types. They make the cheapy types, which almost everybody makes, which is about a 10 to 20 year average. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they have the archival type. Mm-hmm. Which is a pure gold interface, which it's 100 years.
It's a brand.
It's almost double the price.
Do you remember the brand?
Mama or Mama.
Something like that.
Mama. Yeah, there's only like two brands, Daikin, and there's another one, that Myanmar or something like that. Are the only two big ones that are out there that make archival.
I've got discs from, 15, 17 years ago that I still can read today. Of course, they're mainly programs and archive programs that, well, I'm a Mac user now, and that's when I had Windows 95, and so why do I have them? But also, when you look at writable CDs and DVDs, just get the right ones. Don't do the plus RWs. You know, they're meant to be written over. Their lifespan, I think, is at most 10 years.
Yeah, but also too, is when you're writing over a writable DVD or a CD that's writable type, you can get, I'll tell you right now, after about 15 times, it starts losing data very fast. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even use it. Maybe once or twice to ever use something like that. And after that, just consider your data just starting to be lost.
And it, as often as you need to back up, those write-once ones are perfect. We'll go over here on something in a second. But if you have a rewritable, oftentimes you're going to think, hey, I did a backup last week. I need a backup this week. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got that situation where that file gets corrupt and you do a weekly backup and you write over that CD that's got your good one, you just lost it. If you get the right once, you do not have that ability to write over it. It's done. So you've got one for last week, one for this week. Your file gets corrupt, you look at your backup, try to restore it, it's corrupt. That way you can go to the previous week's backup and say, okay, I've got my address book. I only put two people in there. Since I backed it up, I can easily enter those. So, write once.
Don't use plus RW, use what?
Dash R. Just write once. If it's got...
Write once.
Yeah. You don't want the rewritables.
The plus or the dash doesn't matter.
No.
That's the W part that you don't want.
It seems that there's an advantage to using a rewrite as well, another flip side. If you, like me, if the you don't feel like looking around, or you got piles of stuff, and you don't want to have a bunch of just sitting around. It's not, you may run a risk of losing some of your data, but at least you've done something. So if you have to, if you're like me, you're really random, and you don't, you know, you stick something in there, and you probably got a 95% chance or better of getting it back that way, rather than doing nothing like I tend to do. In other words, that's how you can rewrite and manage the data and fix it around like you want. Kind of. That's an advantage.
Keep in mind, the minus R's and plus R's do have a difference because some of the older Macs are only minus, where the pluses will not work in that. So make sure you buy the right type disk for your machine.
And there's a way to figure out what your machine can handle, and I'll show you that.
Well, if you're writing to that VanWire hard drive, okay, and you were talking about we're going to use the RFID here. See, DVD. Okay, if something happens to that file and you back up, say, monthly, and you're using the VanWire hard drive, won't you then still
corrupt
that?
Most backup programs will actually title the backup and make backup sets.
Mine does it by date.
Yeah. So if
so it's not going to mess up that first one that I did.
A good backup software will never write over a previous backup. It will make an entirely new backup set.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And so, nice segue to the next one. Symbols about back.
One quick point on the previous slide. Thumb drive, the kind of memory that's used in thumb drives is also not good for infinite number of overwrites.
Yeah.
So after a couple thousand times, you start having problems. It's not something that for backup purposes you're going to run into a problem with, but if you use a thumb drive for other things on a regular basis, you may be careful. They don't last forever.
Yeah.
You know, they call it flash because it can die in flood. I've had one just die. I mean, I had so much stuff on it.
I've had several
just
die.
Sort of a word to the wise.
Yeah. But if you've got one specifically used for backups, it's small. They generally hold, I think now, 8 gig in a small little thumb drive. So, you know, you back it up, throw it into your safety deposit box, throw it into a safe. Your chances are really good of it still being there. So, some rules about backups. Frequently, double check the logs. Make sure it says that it's complete. You know, if it doesn't say complete, or you're kind of afraid that it might not work, go back it up again. You know, what's it going to hurt? Store in a safe place, like I've been saying. You know, a fireproof safe, safety deposit box, something like that. Especially if it's large amounts of data and redundant. Let's say you backed up to a FireWire hard drive, why not also back up to a CD? That way it gives you two backups, especially if it's important, time-consuming data for you to create. Every accountant I've ever set up, I give them two FireWire hard drives and a DVD burner, and their software will automatically back up to their FireWire hard drive, and then they'll make a backup of that to a DVD. They'll mail off the DVD to the president's house or give it to the owner, and he'll take it home or she'll take it home, depending on how comfortable they feel. That way, there's an off-site and an on-site. You know, just redundancy. That way, something happens, if the building burns down, if that firebox gets too hot and damages what's inside, there's one at home. There's one off-site. So, you know, FireWire hard drives, DVDs, iPod, and now we come to Leopard. I love Leopard. I've got a chance to play around with a beta for about 2 weeks. I'm not running it today. It's still very buggy. My sound does not work under it. However, I use Time Machine. Time Machine looks very much like that. And all of those windows behind that one is a backup point. So let's say I edited one of those photos there and I realized I didn't like the way it looks, or I didn't save as another file and I want to go back to the original. Well, with Leopard and Time Machine, you could then go back in time and recover that file. It is very cool. And it looks awesome. So, that's to come in the future. Whenever, what is it, October is their projected release date?
We'll find out more about that on Monday, won't we?
Yep. But that it is a very cool technology, and I have to applaud them for creating it and having this interface, because I don't own .Mac, and their backup software requires you to have a .Mac subscription to use the .Mac backup. And
it's a pretty good package.
It is a very good package. It's just not worth $100 to me. Yeah. But I really love this. I'm glad they put it in there and they made it free and available for everyone to use. So, that being said, let's see here. So we went over real quick during one of our flashes how to back up our address book. Just go over that real quick again. It's built in, file, backup address book, and then title it whatever it comes up as. Hurry up. And one of the things I do is back up 7/06/09. The reason why I put the year first, because I hear that this month comes around once a year. So if you title it 2007, when it searches through it and lists it, it'll put all your 2007 together. And then it'll do the month, and then it'll do the day. Instead of having to look through and okay, 6, okay, 2007, found it. This way it organizes it a little better.
How abnormally logical.
Yes, it is. And we have an abnormal person with us, too.
Oh, that's
his name.
Is that DMM is your initial?
That is correct.
Oh, okay. I just saw the little
name. I'm so glad they didn't give me the middle name Adam. Even though they call me that all the time.
I got a screwed up mess because I changed to that and I started out just 07. Mm-hmm. So in 06. And now I've got mixed through.
Yeah.
Day.
Well, I mean,
month, day, year, and now year. You know,
month, day, yeah. So. And so I backed it up. Let's say I reload my computer. I can come in here and say, revert to address book backed up.
It's still on your computer.
It's still on my computer at this point. But I could plug in an external hard drive. If I've got my thumb drive with me, I could do it. And I probably don't. No, I don't. But
so what he's saying is that you could take these backup files and you just copy it to a thumb drive. Yeah. So crashing your hard drive, your address book and other stuff like that is all available. It's a nice quick backup. And these days, like an 8 gigabyte thumb drive is like $30.
Yeah.
You can put a lot of backup stuff in 8 gigabytes.
At Staples, I bought a USB 2 and FireWire 300 gig Maxtor drive for, I think, $98. That's a lot of backups. And I've really enjoyed it.
$30 for 8 gig?
I haven't seen that before. Sales. I mean, sometimes they have unlisted sales.
Deal Mac!
Deal
Mac.
Staples has a pretty good sale once you walk in. Yes. I remember at one time I walked in and they had a 2.0 USB 100 gig drive in there for sale for $49. And it was in a case and everything. Yeah, it was pretty good at its price.
External.
Is that external? Yes, it was a Maxtor.
Yeah.
Well, I just plugged in my iPod Nano backup address book. See how it lists with the nice, pretty icon there? And then I'll say new folder, back up, 2007, 0609. So, thanks.
Time machine!
Exactly. So I just created a directory on my iPod. I'm going to save it as address book right there. Save. And if we go here, back up, there we go. And if I come back in here and go, oh no, I lost all my data. Bless you. Bless you again.
Boots down.
Alrighty then.
Thank you.
And so I can restore from the address book. Yes, we want to overwrite it. Oh, okay. Demo worked successfully again. So I can back.
Your first record went to no name.
I just created an entry real quick. I think on my phone, without a name, and
that's his best friend. Don't insult him.
Yeah. So. Anyway, there we go. And while perusing the internet, I was looking for other backup solutions and trying them out and demoing them, seeing what I think about them. And I came across Moosey.
I would have said Moosey.
Moosey, that's right. Moosey. Straight, there's no two O's. So, it's pretty cool. It's free up to 2 gigs online. I can bring up their website. Oh, what's that? There we go. And they've got a unlimited version for $5 a month, or you can get the 2 gig free backup space, no setup, works with Mac and PC. And then, of course, they've got all their nice marketing info here about how they're better. And I just found that really old, really cool. So, let's say I wanted to back up my address book, my mail, that kind of stuff. For now, for the sake of time, we'll just do Firefox bookmarks. And I could say, save configuration. Oh, hold on. Yeah, there we go. And if I ever want to make a change, this little M up here, configure, and I could go back and I could click that. Pretty secure. I haven't read a single bad comment about them. Believe about 2 years. There are companies that are out there that do this for corporate methods. Let's say you've got your small mom and pop company, you want an offsite backup. They've got secure facilities, secure connections, and that's what they do. They do offsite backups, and you can restore to any of them. So, I thought that was pretty cool.
How much is that, sir?
2 gigs for free, or $5 a month. For unlimited.
This is back in the
to the internet. Mm-hmm. You can configure it to take care of your iPhoto library, iTunes library, address book, Firefox bookmarks. It is currently backing up, so maybe it's finished now. But it'll do a lot. Both Mac and PC compatible. I thought that was really cool. If you need just temporary backup.
Sure. Because it says that in the future, as far as security, somebody was talking about security. It's encrypted, file transfer encrypted on the server,
Yep.
And so basically, unless they have the same key that you have, there's no way we can get at the data from the server. Mm-hmm. That would be
my question. No. What was my other question? Or you could have it back up other documents. I wish this thing would stop backing up.
Would show status window work?
Maybe.
It says when it falls back up.
Yeah.
Well, that looks like it's a beta.
Or it's busy. There we go. So, I can come in, tell it to back up my Thunderbird mail, an alternative to Apple Mail, my address book, my Apple Mail, my preferences. Let's say I customize a lot of my applications. I could have it back those up.
That's a pretty slick option. You have a corrupted preference file or something like that.
Yeah. Or you could have it back up specific directories or files. Let's say I want it to back up my documents. I could do that. My website on my computer, I could have it do that. All kinds of cool stuff. I think it's very comparable to using the .Mac backup.
You would be right.
It's got lots of very cool features.
But it's a beta?
No, it is not a beta.
0.5.
Does not necessarily mean it's a beta.
It actually said that on the web page. That's why I said it's beta.
Where does it say beta?
Mac Rosie beta.
Ah, there we go. They don't label it as a beta in the software. That's interesting. Anyway, Suman did a demo of Super Duper a while back. And by far, everyone on the internet that I've gone to and logs, they highly recommend Super Duper. It is an awesome backup software. I'm not going to go over this too much because Suman did that. So, I would show you how to back up to a DVD, but Empire Strikes Back seems to like my laptop. Backity Mac. It's another program that does a lot of features like the .Mac backup. I've used it on my computer before, and I rather like it. It does file backups. It will actually...
Okay, so it can backup stuff from your iPod.
And there's an important part of that. If you buy music from iTunes up until the iTunes Plus, there's DRM, the Digital Rights Management. And Apple will sometimes let you re-download the files that you've purchased, I think up to, what is it, 3 times?
I've heard it's once per year, maybe.
Yeah.
It might be 3 times total. So, I don't know.
Let's say something happens to your hard drive. This happened to me back when my laptop hard drive crashed. I lost all of my purchased music. Sent them an email. They said, okay, make sure you back up your stuff for later. Stupid. They let me re-download. So the next time I logged into my iTunes account, it said checking for purchased music, and it started downloading everything.
You must grovel.
So, I was very happy that they did that. So if you have any music that you've purchased, any videos, any movies, back them up. Because it takes a while to download, and... Go ahead.
I'm just curious. Has anybody else purchased music from iTunes, and then when EMI came out with the option to upgrade to the non-DRM, unprotected version. Has anybody else done it? How many did it come up and tell you? Three?
Three out of...
I beat you.
160.
I beat you. Four?
Whoa.
Out of about 400.
Basically, what they're talking about is iTunes came out with digital rights management free files that you can purchase and download. Well, if you had purchased that song before, you can upgrade it to the non-restricted one. So, anyway.
Non-restricted.
Yes, it does not have the DRM where it's encrypted and has a little key to where...
Yeah, it is encrypted in a way, but it's got your email address.
Yeah.
Exactly. It has information about who bought the song.
Yeah.
Can you take an iTunes download? I've never done it. Mm-hmm. And put it on a CD?
Yeah.
So isn't that a backup in a way?
If you're looking for audio?
Yeah.
Yes. It'll back it up that way. But if you're looking at the file in its original content, no. You actually want to back up the file instead of bringing it as strictly as an audio CD. It's a lot easier to come back and restore that file than it is to pop the CDs in and name the tracks if it hasn't already. It's a lot less time consuming.
Well, two things. Yeah. First of all, it's time-consuming from the standpoint of that you have to rewrite the information off the CD. But second of all, when you're saving it out to a CD, you're taking the AAC file format that Apple has and creating the WAV file format again, which is what the CDs normally have. And there's generation loss. It's almost like making an analog version out of it and then re-digitizing it. So the best thing to do if you want to back up your iTunes music is to back up the actual ACC file format, because then you have no generation loss.
Which is what he said. Back up the actual files.
Yeah. Ma'am?
Is it possible to take a DVD with a book on tape and transfer it to your iPod so you can listen to it?
A DVD or a CD?
Probably
yeah. Just pop it into your
computer. Just put it in your computer and hook up your iPod.
Put it into your computer, open up iTunes, and it'll have a button that says import.
Uh-huh.
If I can get my iTunes to come up. Alright. So this little icon here that says browse will turn into what looks like an album with an arrow, and it'll say import under it. So you could then import that audio CD into your computer, you plug in your iPod, it'll sync with iTunes, which will have the audio CD in it.
I find something to do with my iPod. Thank you.
You're welcome. And back it up. Did you have a comment?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you moved your hand like you did. But back at the Mac, same kind of features as the other. You can iCalendar. I use iCalendar a lot. I schedule functions. I use it for day-to-day stuff. Raise your hand if you know what keychains is for. Okay. Well,
how to use it?
Well, keychains isn't something that you generally like go in and actively use. It should be fairly transparent. It holds like your wireless encryption key, passwords, that type of stuff. If you ever go to a website and you type in your username and password, if Safari or Firefox ever comes up and says, "Hey, do you want me to remember this password for next time?" And you say, "Yeah," it stores that into keychains. Next time you go to that website, the application we'll say, hey, Keychains, I'm at this website. You got a username and password for me? Yeah. It'll grab it and fill it in for you automatically.
And so if anybody else gets on the computer, they can do that too?
Under that account. Under your user account.
Can you leave the passwords you put in?
I know you can for wireless. But you have to authenticate to decrypt it to be able to view it.
Websites of what can use Keychains, you know, especially the government and special bank or credit cards. So I use it all the time. And some, I have to still type that crap in over again. I'm the only one who uses my computer.
Yeah. I know some banks, like Redstone, prevent you from being able to by having a very interesting login method. It gives you this little keyboard you have to click on to fill in the password. And
those, I'm not talking about that. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. It's your standard.
I don't know. If a way for them to block it.
Browsers are rather flaky about remembering passwords.
Yeah.
I use passwords for the various discussion boards, the one that I have for HMUD and the one I have for campus. Some computers remember it, others don't. And it seems rather, you know, random to me why. I can't remember this, and it still doesn't. So, but by bringing this up, they're, you know, passwords and serial numbers and so forth. There are some several programs actually that are there to outside of using Keychain to store those. Wallet comes to mind. That's what I use.
Yeah, good one. But that's a good thing to back up. I had to restore my laptop recently because I had Leopard on it. And when I backed it up before I installed Leopard, I backed up my keychains. That way I wouldn't have to go write down a, 26-character airport key to then type into my laptop to get back on my wireless. I backed up my keychains files. And when I reinstalled my operating system, I restored them, and boom, it got on my AirPort at home without me typing a single thing. And that's very cool. Bookmarks. How many bookmarks do most of us have? Hundreds? Yeah.
Something like 10,000?
Yeah. how long did it take you to accumulate the hoard of bookmarks? Yeah. And so that's, huh?
How many do you use?
Yeah, how many do you use? Do you have that should never going to use again?
Yeah. And how many of them do you use for more of a reference purpose?
That's the best ringtone.
But, you know, back up your bookmarks. Photos. I cannot tell you how many times I have actually loaded up my hard drive with photos. I use my digital camera a lot. And so what I'll do is I'll back up my iPhoto library, I'll archive it into a safe place, and then I'll go back through and be like, okay, I don't need this one, I don't need that one. So I freed up 20, 30 gigs of space on my hard drive because those were projects I was working on. Now I'm not. Filled up my hard drive, backed it up, cleaned out some space so I can continue on. But I always have those photos available because they're in a backup, and I can always restore those photos. So, photos.
Yeah. It'd be nice to have photos in mind. I'm sure the people who are trying to profile you like some information access, but it'd be nice to have something that counted the frequency of every information on the hard drive for purposes. Let's say you want to back up just with the most amount of time. And it gets into incremental backup that goes on and ask about it. But, you know, is there anything out there that counts the frequency that you go with?
I don't know. I've actually ran into that before.
Which is not an entire indicator, because I mean, you there's certain things that you almost never, but you all definitely back up. You know,
yeah.
Well,
it's constantly opening up your iPhoto library or something, and that's what you open the most.
Oh,
yeah, say in a certain file. Yeah, I've opened this file up.
On like, I got a T camera on my phone. You know, I go there all the time.
Yeah. The backup program on my external hard drive does two types of backups. It does a full one and it does a backup.
Yeah.
So,
that's what super duper. That's one of the biggest things about super duper that Simon did. It actually will look at files that change and only those that change. Yeah. In fact, just that.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I can
know. But just within the Finder here, I just did the Apple Command F, and it brought up this little window. Last modified, any date, last opened since yesterday. And if I come back in since yesterday, oh, hey, I got one file. Nope, got a couple of files now. And so it'll narrow it down to what I've modified since yesterday, or I could do this week within the last 2 weeks. And using Automator, I can then write my kind of own custom backup script, and we can have that for another day.
Does it have a backup program within itself?
No.
Oh, well, okay.
If you subscribe to .Mac, they provide you one. But
it just so happens my external hard drive has a backup program.
Yeah.
What would be your recommendation or caution note? Years ago I had a bunch of Lacy drives. I bought all of these for Lacy backup software, and it seemed to work good. Since then, I bought other drives and I continue to use that. It seems to work, and I'm not meaning to ask that question in Slack.
Mm-hmm.
And now, since we have a backup session tutorial today, I'll ask it. Would you recommend just going back to one of those two or three programs you introduced versus using a manufacturer, vendor, supplier backup program?
Silverkeeper's pretty nice. Silverkeeper's pretty nice. It was free, it came with the drive, it was a backup. And it's a very nice build. It's just like the ones that come with the Western Digital and the Max Cores and all of them that have a one button drive.
It's a question. Can you talk about the new MacBook Pros before? Yeah.
This is very stretching backup, but I have a whole bunch of VHS tapes I'd like to put on DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do that, or do I take it to somebody else?
You can do that with the purchase of hardware. What is it? The ProLink AV. That's a TV tuner, AV input, FireWire, or is it USB 2?
Well, there's a bunch of different ones out there.
What kind of investment are we talking about? Should I?
Elgato makes a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So does Milius.
Yeah.
Miglia.
Yeah.
And you're talking about 250 to 300.
I think I've seen 130.
You can get for about $149.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it'll also, you can actually hook up cable television to it also, mm-hmm. record a television program.
Yep.
So it's got video inputs directly to record line input as well as.
Yeah, but just be careful.
Yeah.
If you've got the lower price model, there's one that sells for about $100. That's just cable input. There's no video.
Yeah,
that's only just cable.
And that's the one I have.
Yeah, you want to get the 149 one. It's got the RCA inputs,
right.
The S video inputs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the box that does that.
Yeah,
who's that?
It's probably one of the biggest. They also give you a TV guide program too.
Can you spell that again?
It's a third party.
Gato.
GATO.
Yeah, did you mean Elgato?
Elgato?
There you go. That cat.
That's it right there. smaller notes.
That's a new model. I mean, the one I'm talking about is the hybrid. That's the one that I know doesn't have.
Yeah. Yeah, the hybrid only does the...
Select your country, Argentina. Select your source.
I just do other.
Yeah.
That's what I always do. And then it lists two. Go to the one.
Been to this site a lot?
A lot. Sure. Then. There you go. And the one that's really good is that one right there. That's okay. The other. So you can take it, see it does all over right there.
Yeah.
And you can read more about it. It says VHS tape.
Is that an ITV 250?
Yes, a 250.
That's the right model.
Is that the only source you can buy?
Larry.
Larry's got it.
And Larry probably has it too.
Larry carries it.
Yep. They're very cool.
I can do it.
In fact, I'll sign you up for a demo for it. But I don't know if y'all noticed, but I pulled up Automator here real quick, and I said, anywhere on my computer, modify date since yesterday, create an archive, put it on my desktop, and it's working on it. So.
Would it be reasonable to copy the entire hard drive onto an external hard drive?
You would use either Super Duper or Carbon Copy Cloner.
The problem is that once you do it, how are you going to save the changes? Do that again and again?
Right. Yeah.
But your backup strategy has to be more than just make an archival copy of once.
If you're just making an actual duplicate of your hard drive, the disk utility built into the Mac already has that capability.
Right.
Just go from hard drive to hard drive, and it will make an exact copy, and it will be booted.
So.
Disk utility, under utilities right there. And what you'll do is you'll select the hard drive. You'll select the hard drive that you want right there, and it'll go over there and say restore. Say it right there. And it'll then take the hard drive name, drag it to the source, and then find the destination and drag that also to the destination. And then you'll hit restore. And it'll restore it to that.
If you got enough room. My iPod does not.
I don't think it's
an
easy
one.
If you've got an iPod.
Yeah,
it's
a good
iPod.
Now, can you do this booted into the OS, or do you have to boot from your installed DVD?
Now, actually, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, let me give you a little bit more about this. This right here, they really suggest if you use the hard drive utility, close all applications. Don't sit there and start browsing the internet and why it's doing this and all that, because you're changing the system.
Yes. Yeah.
So it will run, even though the system's running and there's files that are open, it will make the changes, close them to the point where it makes an exact duplicate, and then it will come back. Now, that process will take, depends on the size of the drive. I've seen 80 gig hard drives can take up to about 3 hours to do a full store from one to the other.
And it's
putting it on your...
It's making an exact duplicate.
Okay.
One for one.
One for one. That's what it does.
And depending on...
That's the ultimate for everything.
The fail-safe alternative.
You can drop your hard drive, you can move your backup data file.
Depending on your computer, if you use this method or Carbon Copy Cloner, if something just tragically happens to your computer, you can pull that hard drive out, plug it in, and boot from it. And it's just easy as that. So.
Which backup program do you recommend?
I really recommend the Super Duper. I like it, and I like iBackup, which we didn't get to today. It's got a lot more options than the other, so...
Have you ever heard of a program called Synchronized Pro?
I have not.
QD, yeah. It's decent software also.
It's what?
It's decent also. I will tell you that somebody did a comparison of all the backup programs and found that SuperDuper was the best at doing all the associated metadata.
How much does it cost?
$29, I think.
$29,
I think. $27.46
or
$100. Synchronize Pro is $99, yeah. $99. Synchronize Pro is more intended for, I think, mirroring servers and things like that. It's a more professional level kind of thing.
Yeah. One last note. When you back up, I do not recommend the drag and drop method. If you plug in an external hard drive and you just want to back up your documents, you drag and drop that over, and then next time you do the same thing, it can actually overwrite any file that you've deleted from that directory. It's not that great of a method. Use a piece of software. It'll manage it for you. So, it is well over our time.
When you use SuperDuper Pro, you do it by, I guess, date, is that it?
Yeah.
So you have a record of...
when that backup was made.
If you do it once a week, you have 52 backups. Mm-hmm. Or changes, I guess, mm-hmm. to what happened.
Yeah, so if something messes up
the
this...
The original time you back up is going to take 3 hours to do 80, whatever you call it, gigs or...
Mm-hmm. No, that's just to back up that entire hard drive, to make a one-for-one.
After that, you just do an incremental backup of changes. Mm-hmm.
So once you make that 80 gig copy, use a piece of software, iBackup, SuperDuper... Backity Mac.
Don't go back.
Thank you, Zuma. But that's it. Use that.
Yay!
Once a week. Let's go to eat.